In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about surviving job loss. Of course, when you lose your job, we're not just talking here about loss of income. That would be bad enough. But there's really more to it than that, because people do develop important ties to the place that they work and the people that they work with. And sometimes being laid off can be something like being evicted from your homeland. With that sort of idea in mind, we'll be talking this morning with Ruth Luban about her book, Are You a Corporate Refugee?, a phrase that she kind of came up to describe that experience. The subtitle is A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. It's available in a paperback. It's published by Penguin and is not terribly expensive if you think this is something that could benefit you. Ruth Luban is a counselor and consultant in private practice. She has spent quite a few years now developing workshops and treatment programs for a wide variety of clients, both individuals and corporations. She's done a lot of lecturing. She has, since 1988, specialized in issues of midlife transition, professional burnout, and associated topics, and as I mentioned, is the author of this particular book. Questions, of course, are welcome as we talk with Ruth Luban. If you'd like to call in, you have questions, comments, all you need to do is dial the number. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us, anywhere around Illinois, Indiana, any place that signal will travel, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Ms. Luban, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me with you.
I think your phrase corporate refugee is not just a nice turn of phrase, which it is, but I think it's apt. And I was really struck by one of the quotes. You have a lot of nice quotes in the book. This one happens to be from the Italian writer Primo Levi, which I think was right on the hitting the nail on the head. He says, Barely said, the bond between a man and his profession is similar to that which ties him to his country. It's just as complex, often ambivalent, and in general is understood completely only when it's broken. I like that a lot, and I think that really does suggest that maybe using a term, such a loaded term as refugee for somebody who's been laid off, maybe that's really on the mark.
Well, it certainly feels like it for the people that I've seen, and I'm a corporate refugee as well. I've had my own dot-com experience that ended with a layoff just a few months ago, so I've seen it firsthand, and I've seen it secondhand, and I think there's no question, because a refugee, by definition, is an innocent victim of forces beyond our control, and the kind of layoffs and downsizings that are going on right now are really not about the worker. It's about the bottom line. So we are definitely refugees.
And we've seen it accelerate in recent years, even in economic good times. And now that people are maybe a little starting to wonder, what's going to happen with the economy, if there's a downturn, I guess we should expect it might get worse.
Oh, I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Uh-huh. That what's happening now, actually, the term downsizing got coined in the beginning of the 90s when we were in a recessionary kind of spiral, and downsizing was the answer to it, sort of the Band-Aid to it. Now, today, this month, downsizing is being used as a preventive as companies anticipate a possible recession and are trying to sort of do what they have to do in terms of what they call cutting the headcount to prevent a disaster in terms of their stock valuation, et cetera. So now downsizing is a cliche, and I don't think it's going to stop. I think it's the response that companies use, one of them, in order to get back into balance.
Well, you suggested that one goes through, as perhaps with other transitions that one faces in life, that you go through a kind of predictable set of stages.
Yeah.
And maybe we could talk about each one of those a little bit in turn, beginning with that first stage when you start to suspect something's going on. And you have in the book a list of proverbial red flags, things
right.
that when you see some of these things happening, then you ought to start thinking to yourself, or maybe people do see it, they realize, oh, this is not good.
Right. That stage, that in my opinion is stage one of the corporate refugee journey, and I call it being on the brink, which means we're still in the job, but there are outer signals that the job could be going away. Most of the clients I talk with learn of those kinds of changes through the morning newspaper or the internet when they see announcements of mergers and acquisitions, because we're all now trained to realize that will include layoffs. But within the job, if you see vacancies that are left unfilled, an increase in closed-door meetings, a seeming increase in reorganizations and budget cuts, even within single departments, vacations go away, the perks go away, expense accounts get canceled. Sometimes people are asked to write their job description, even people who have been in the same job for maybe a decade. And that's come to be a signal, a real strong signal, that this job may be replaced by some software or a less expensive worker, or maybe it'll be eliminated.
Yeah. And at that point, I don't know that we would be surprised particularly if people would experience increased anxiety. They would start worrying about the uncertainty. And here, I think your advice is good, that you're suggesting to people, you know, you can respond to that in two major ways. You can do it in negative ways, in ways that probably are not very, or maybe a little bit self-destructive, probably. Or you can try and respond to it in positive ways, and that's probably a little bit more difficult. It takes more deliberate action, but doing things like, for example, making sure you're taking care of yourself at that point. That's something really people should keep in mind.
Well, what's natural to us, and one of the things I really tried to do in the book, is to normalize the emotional experience that we go through each of these stages. But every one of the stages has an emotional load. So even though intellectually you may know that the best thing to do is be proactive, what's common to many of us is to go into denial and to cling to what is known. And for a lot of people, it's like, this can't be happening to me. I made my numbers. I've made every benchmark they've put in front of me. My evaluations are stellar. They just gave me a great big fat raise. So we go into denial, excuse me, and my push is don't cling to what you have and try to avoid denial, but rather be proactive and start to do your sort of some advanced planning in anticipation of the possibility of the pink slip, because while you're working, you can get a lot done that will make the letting go process, which is stage two, a lot easier. So it includes things like financially getting your house in order, really getting organized, get your resume organized, your files organized, your finances organized in a way that you know what your budget is and how you might be able to simplify it. You find out whether you're entitled to a refinance of your home now that the mortgage rates are going down, or maybe an equity line of credit. Create a cash reserve, maybe 3 to 6 months worth if you possibly can, by looking at whether you have equity in a life insurance policy or stocks that would be reasonable to sell. The important thing is that we get blinded by financial insecurity and also by the whole uncertainty of not knowing what's next. So if you can use the on-the-brink stage to do some preparation and get your house in order, so to speak, while you're still working, that will help tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Of course, those are the things that probably are that we all put off.
Uh-huh.
When things are going okay, because we're busy, we're working, we don't have time. That's one of those realities of working, I think, is even if you're interested in looking for another job, it's really hard to look for another job while you've already got one.
It really is. And I don't even think that now's the time to be actively looking, although if you have a resume that's ready for a kind of passive job search, you can put that on the internet, or you might be able to network with some industry-specific recruiters and just give them the resume. But you're right. It's most of us work 50 to 80-hour-a-week jobs right now, so there's absolutely no time. And people who have a family have two full-time jobs. So there's really no time to go job hunting. But there is time to decide sort of who are my allies in this company, sort of shore up a support system of colleagues and friends and family and industry-specific trade associations, really start to build a network that might not only support you through the emotional trauma, but become networking is the name of the game, and this network will become your sort of support system and brainstorming system for the next step. So it's not active job hunting per se, but again, it's getting all your ducks in a row.
I probably should at this point introduce again our guest for this hour of Focus 580. We're speaking with Ruth Luban. She's a psychotherapist and a consultant. She has a private practice, has done a lot of workshops for many different sorts of clients, both individuals and corporate clients. She has specialized in the issues of midlife transition and professional burnout and is the author of a book that we're talking about. The title of the book is Are You a Corporate Refugee? Practical and Creative Strategies to Turn Transition into Transformation for those people who have experienced a layoff or maybe somehow in that process. Or maybe if you just think that there's the chance that it might be there lurking in the future. It offers some good advice on how to deal with the experience. It's published by Penguin. It's in paper. It is not a very expensive book and should be in the bookstore if you want to look at it. And questions, comments are certainly welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana where we are, 333-9455 and toll-free anywhere. You can hear us around Illinois, Indiana, anywhere that signal will travel, 800-222-9455. I guess that probably some people, when threatened by the possibility of losing a job, if something else comes along, maybe if it seems like it's not the perfect thing, they're going to feel that they better take it.
Exactly, which could be a major problem, could be a false start. I mean, I have clients who are in their third and fourth layoffs. Out here in California, we have this is dot-com land, you know, and we've been going through quite a few rounds of layoffs. So what happens is if people get a good offer and it looks like, okay, I'll jump ship because I think this job is going away, or they know their job is going away and they take the first thing that comes along, very often they end up in a worse situation. And every one of these losses is a loss of more than just a paycheck. I mean, we're losing coworkers, a sort of structure that it takes a while to adjust to, a sense of community, and definitely a loss of trust. You know, that most people who've been displaced feel not just angry, but they feel betrayed. It's like they brought the fullness of their personal integrity and commitment to the job, but they don't feel that it's mutual. They're beginning to distrust employers. So my suggestion is take as much time as you can afford, basically, to really do your homework before you say yes to the next offer so that you can make sure you're going into a solid situation that'll last a bit longer and not be subject to another round.
Yeah. I think you certainly offer sound advice where you look at the on the brink period when people have this inkling that something's happening, mm-hmm. where you're saying, well, then you need to get ready. You need to make sure your resume is ready. You need to, as best as you can, make sure your finances are sort of in order. And it would be a good idea to try and, again, so you don't feel this pressure that you have to take the first job that comes along, to know that you can meet your bills for a period of time
right.
without working. Is there some sort of rule of thumb about, should you figure that you could make it for a month or 2 months, or is there any way to say that?
The average that I heard this month, I think it's different. It's every industry is different in terms of the available jobs. And obviously technology jobs are still pretty much in demand, especially if you have cutting-edge skills, while jobs in the manufacturing sector are going to take longer to find. So it's industry-specific, and the more you can do your homework, again, the Internet is a great resource for this, as to what's going on in your industry, the easier it would be to sort of project how far out there you need to prepare financially. But this month they're saying the average is 3 months to get a new position, although temp work and contract work can be had fairly quickly. So it won't be at the income level that you've been used to, but it'll be better than than nothing if you don't have enough of a cash reserve. And if you want to buy some time to do that kind of self-evaluation, that I think is really important.
Yeah. And I suppose this goes without saying, but if it's probably a good idea to leave on the – if you're going to be leaving, you better leave on the best terms that you can. That is, if you're thinking about a reference, you know, you don't want to – if you, no doubt when you're laid off, people are angry, and maybe they want to take that out on someone or something. But if you can manage to keep that in check – Probably a good idea to do that.
Well, it is. And again, if you can find a support group for corporate refugees, which I'm real passionate about launching, or find, you know, friends, family, coworkers through whom you can vent, it's really, really important to vent. But you're right, it's better not to do that on your way out. A lot of people, though, do get packages, which mitigates the loss a little bit, even though they're angry at the same time. But they're often made to sign an agreement that they won't talk about their package or about the terms of their displacement. And those people have an even harder time because they don't feel they have permission to talk about it. But definitely don't act it out on your way out the door.
Yeah. I think that it is also a fact of life that often when there are layoffs, it's often the senior people, sometimes very experienced people have long years with the company, those are the ones that are going to be some of the first to go and may also face particular difficulties when they're then going out into the workplace looking for work because, you know, it's a sad thing, but I think there is ageism out there in hiring.
Okay.
And is there some particular sort of advice that you would have for older workers?
Well, I would say, again, this is different across industries, but typically older workers are more expensive. So that's one reason. It's just that their seniority has helped them build a higher level of income. But the critical thing is to get your skills to a place that you have something to offer in today's marketplace. So if there's an opportunity to retread, to get some training in a direction, again, it has to match your passions and your predisposition, your temperament. But if you the techie skills right now are still in demand. And so even though, again, they like the young, the 20s techie cowboys who like to go from job to job and who are fast, there's still a great demand for them. There are resources online, and I've got them listed in the book, like the NCOA, the National Council on Aging. Most of the career boards have, including the Wall Street Journal's online website, has some specific areas for older workers with coaching and actual job listings. So I know not everyone is online, but it's such a quick way to really do some homework and see if you were going to retrain, what is in demand, what exists in your geographical area. You really need to do a little research. And don't be intimidated by the ageism. I agree that it's there, but it doesn't mean all or nothing. It simply means that you have to do a little bit more homework and be more aggressive in the right direction.
Yeah. We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that there is a rather predictable sort of process that one goes through, and there are some elements of grieving. It may sound a little funny to use a term like that when you're talking about a job, but I think that it is the fact that most people are pretty serious about their jobs. They put a lot of time into them, and in fact, their identity comes to be shaped by their work. It's still as much true now, I think, as ever that when you meet somebody, what do you ask them? Well, you ask them what they do,
right?
What is their job? And that seems so much to be a part of who we are that then when that's gone, then I'm sure that leads to some questioning of, well, who exactly am I? And
exactly. And
letting go of all of that, particularly if you've invested years and years. I'm sure that's really hard.
Well, you feel there's a loss of the community, the people that you've been with within the workplace, you know, sort of, and a sense of community is a process that builds over time as people listen to you and respond to you and work side by side with you. So that's a huge loss. And there's also a loss of feeling necessary to the company and to others. There's a loss of loyalty, as we said before, a loss of continuity, because most of us who, as you said, derive a sense of meaning and purpose and identity from our work, if we like it, we assume that as long as we give our all, we will be able to continue there and sort of demonstrate, prove ourselves. And it's an opportunity to build character over time. And most of us don't expect to leave. So those are huge losses. It's like the rug's been pulled out from under. And it's so precipitous these days. There's so little warning that makes the loss even greater. Mm-hmm. There's spillover into the family for people who have children to support and mortgages and car payments and all the overhead that most of us collect. There's a huge loss of predictability in terms of how that's all going to be covered. So, yeah, there's a lot of loss.
Yeah, and my guess is even with people who previously would not have said that they loved their jobs might be surprised, actually, that they felt that way.
Exactly. It's so interesting. It's like, I mean, that was my experience. I had some warning in advance of the dot-com I was involved with running out of money. I had 2 months of warning. And get this, I had already written the book. I knew these stages, and I had a close relationship with the COO, who was the one that dished out the layoff notices. And in spite of all of that, I went through a grief. I didn't love the work either. I mean, I grew to not really totally believe in what we were doing. But nevertheless, I had this feeling of, this was not on my terms. It's one thing for me not to want to be here anymore, but I want to do it when I'm ready to do it. I don't want someone to yank it away from me before I'm ready.
Mm. Well, what are some of the things you suggest that people might do at this point to try to deal with that?
With the grief. Well, for one thing, honor the feelings that are going through you, because it's going to feel chaotic for a while. You're going to swing between feeling betrayed and hurt and angry and maybe just totally lost and disoriented. There's a certain amount of shock that we all go through. It's so normal. So if you feel that and you're not someone who's used to feeling that way, try not to bury it. Try to give yourself some time to really process the feelings, whether you journal about it or talk about it or take a walk and really just get the stress out of your body. One of the things that I'm really big with is what I call daily rituals for self-care, which is to really take care of your health. And during this grieving period or this letting go stage, it's so stressful that if you've been going through job stress anyway, and maybe you've compromised on sleep or on nutrition or given up exercise in favor of overwork, now is the time to really pay attention to your health, because the added stress of the job loss could really set you up to get sick. The other thing is to get support, whether it's from family or a support group, or if you have the gift of some outplacement, career counseling, wherever you can, find a place where you can vent and be reminded who you are. That's what I'm trying to do through the book as well, is to give people journal processes that if you don't have a support group, you can work through these exercises and really start to remember who you are. You're much more than your job, and it's going to take a little time to disidentify from that job and remember who else you are, and that's the work of this stage.
Yeah. And I'm sure that this is also the point where I talked a little bit earlier about the fact that you coping can be positive or negative, and
right.
You know, there are all kinds of things, and including what you mentioned, the importance of support groups. So one negative thing people could do would just be to withdraw.
Right.
They could spend time, you know, doing what? Sitting in front of the television set. Or,
right.
You know, I'm sure it's also a time when people might be likely to, you know, overindulge in something. They might
right.
overeat. They might have too much alcohol. There's all kinds of things that might, in the short run, feel good, but of course, in the long run, are bad. They're dysfunctional behaviors.
Exactly.
But if you're sort of in pain, you're going to do what'll numb it.
Right. Exactly. And so, again, I think what's critical is to understand that the feelings, those painful feelings, are very normal. They're appropriate to this kind of loss. So rather than numb those feelings, because that's not going to make them go away, it's better to process them, to talk about them, to write about them, to sort of feel them through a period of time. And the more you allow them, the faster they'll move through. ironically, the more you numb them, the longer it takes to get over this kind of a loss.
We're already just a little past the midpoint of the program, and if people are listening, if they have questions or comments or want to be involved in the conversation in any way, they can certainly give us a call here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And if it would be a long-distance call, so you're listening around Illinois or Indiana or any place, and it would be long-distance, use the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Our guest is a therapist consultant, Ruth Luban. Among other things, she specialized in issues of midlife transition and professional burnout, and is the author of a book that explores this territory, titled Are You a Corporate Refugee?, published by Penguin. It's in paper, and it looks at this whole business of what people go through when they lose their job, when they've been laid off, and they have to figure out what they're going to do next. She says that people go through a rather predictable set of stages, and knowing that and managing that can make the business easier. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, this next stage is the stage that you call in the wilderness. And we talked a bit ago about, I asked the question about, you know, how long on the average can people expect that the search, job search, can take? And it can take months. And this can really be a time when people are feeling lost.
Mm-hmm.
As they've been cut off from this thing that was an anchor or maybe an organizing principle of their life, right, that is the work. And now maybe they're also starting to think about, you know, who I am. Was this really what I wanted to be doing? Do I want to do something else? And I'm sure that it is a time when people do feel lost.
Right. You know, the stages that we're talking about, I think it's important to emphasize that they're somewhat fluid. It's not like you have this experience of stage one, stage two, stage three necessarily sequentially. I mean, you might dive into exploring these in the book and realize I'm swinging between periods of grief and periods of euphoria, that I don't have to be there anymore. And that's real characteristic of this wilderness, the I call it a period of active wandering and self-exploration when, yes, the next structure, the new job, isn't quite visible. It isn't, we don't have it in hand yet, but it's actually a great opportunity once you've allowed that grief to, by and large, to be acknowledged and expressed and you found some good ways to vent it. Now's the time to really dig down and say, well, given my work experience, given my passions, my talent, my insights as a result of what I've been through, you know, who am I now and what do I really want to be doing? And in a way, even though it's ambiguity and uncertainty are really, really, really uncomfortable for most of us, that period of not knowing, we like to know, we Americans. But if you can allow a viable period of wandering where you can do some real concrete self-assessment and self-evaluation and look at what's possible for you, think outside the box, and as you know, I've got many, many exercises, hands-on paper and pencil exercises that you can do to sort of clarify your values and look at your priorities and preferences. And if you can take some time, as much time as you can afford, to really dig down and look at this, you may recognize that you didn't love that job or that industry or that profession. You were doing it because it was there and because you were good at it, but now you really have options, and it's a great opportunity to define them and redirect your career.
I'm sure that this is the point where some people will say actually having lost the one job was the best thing that ever happened to them,
mm-hmm.
and which for everybody else who is going through the experience is probably real hard to take,
exactly,
to listen to. They say, oh yeah, get out of here, best thing that's ever,
yeah,
what are you talking about? You know, but I suppose it is an opportunity for, rather than to immediately do again. You know, if you were an accountant, you're going to look for another job as an accountant, or, you know, whatever, nothing against accountants, whatever you're doing, you're thinking, well, this is what I am and this is what I do, so I'm just going to look for another one of those.
Right.
It does present the opportunity, as you suggest, to think, well, is that really, did I ever want to do that? Or is,
right,
is it just now, this is not what I want to do? Or, you know, I've discovered that there's some other thing that you know, maybe it wasn't an opportunity before, or I never thought about it, to say, do I really want to go in a completely different direction?
Exactly. I can tell you a classical story about this. It's a female lawyer who was working for one of the big HMOs out here that was merging their legal offices. The Southern and Northern California legal offices were becoming one. And she's a single mom of three kids. She knew, she could see the handwriting on the wall. So she asked management repeatedly, is my job at risk? She really knew that she didn't love law, but she was making enough money to support a family of four, and she figured she should just keep on keeping on so that she, you know, she wouldn't be at risk financially. They kept reassuring her that her job was not at risk, she would be okay, until the inevitable pink slip came anyway. She was furious. She felt she had done her due diligence by asking, but she was cast into the wilderness for a while. And when she got over being angry and started really looking at what she preferred, she had to recognize that not only did she no longer like law, but her passion was teaching, and she wanted to teach history in high school, which seems like a, you know, a far cry financially from being a lawyer, but she decided to try it. So she got, and teaching, by the way, is one of those professions that they're really needing people now. So it's not one that's quite on the chopping block like some of the others. So she got a, she took 3 months off to get a provisional teaching certificate, and she's now in her second year of teaching and loves it. And her big fear that she wasn't going to be able to support her kids turned out not to be true. Yes, she's making less money, but she says she's spending less on entertainment and on helping herself feel better because she really didn't love going into work every day before. So most people, I agree with you, David, when they go into this, they feel like, how in the world could I enjoy a period of not knowing? But many, many people I've worked with look back on it and say it was the best thing that could have happened. And they also say, I wish I would have allowed myself to enjoy the time off more. I spent it worrying, and now that I see what the outcome was, I wish I could have been more present with it and really, you know, embraced it a bit more. So I say that to people, even though they're in the midst of their shock and pain. It's like, you know what, if you could be with this right now and take advantage of some time, you know, to really make some choices, you'll not only overcome that feeling of powerlessness that this thing was done to me, but you'll be able to sort of feel like the locus of control is inside of you, that you are choosing. And hopefully, if there's future disruption, you'll know how to do that rather than feeling like you could be a victim again.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does seem to be, for some people at least, a time when there's a real questioning of how they live, what their values are, how they want to live, and maybe a reassessing. And I guess at the same time, sometimes it seems that these are people who already had a very high standard of living and were saying, well, we could have a moderately less high standard of living, so maybe they're not giving up. Maybe they're not giving up that much, but at the same time, it does seem to be the case that people really, you know, look at how they live and they ask themselves, well, are these things that last week we thought were vital, essential?
Exactly.
Is this really so important?
Exactly. Exactly. And most of the time, what's most important are our relationships and our, you know, our health and well-being, and those were compromised when people were overworking and desperately trying to score the big salary. It really forces us to sort of reevaluate and say what really matters to me. But again, these things we're talking about, people usually share that they came up with this retrospectively. When they're going through it, it's still really difficult. So one of the things I suggest, again, is to see if you can find temporary work or contract work that will allow you to feel that you're bringing some money in, but also allow you the time to do this introspection.
And I think that's, I realize we're sort of going over the same ground, but it just, I'm coming back to the idea that how difficult it may seem, because even, I think even if people are happy with what they're doing and their job seems to be stable, I think often if you say to them, okay, if you had to do something else, what would it be? And I think a lot of folks would have no idea for that answer, would have no answer. They'd say, well, I don't know. And it actually, even entertaining the notion of doing something different takes some effort.
Exactly. And it's sadly, we aren't educated to do a periodic reassessment. If things are going well, we don't think to do it. It's sad in our culture that crisis seems to facilitate it. Either you get injured or ill, or you lose your job. And through those crises, you're forced to reevaluate. I think it'd be great if we used New Year's or birthdays or, you know, sort of periodic occasions as a sort of anniversary for self-evaluation and assessing, am I on the path I choose?
Well, again, let me mention we have about 10 minutes left in this part of the program. We're talking with psychotherapist consultant Ruth Luban. Her book is titled, Are You a Corporate Refugee? A Survival Guide for Downsized, Disillusioned, and Displaced Workers. It's about the experience of dealing with and surviving, coming through, maybe better than you started the business of losing your job. It's available in paper. It's published by Penguin. Questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free. 800-222-WILO. Well, we've been talking about the fact that this thing sort of goes in stages with the qualification that there are not sort of hard dividing lines between these places and people sort of go back and forth. But generally speaking, it's a somewhat linear sort of process.
Right.
The last stage is that it's the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly.
When you really do see the thing and you've now got another goal. You kind of have a sense in where you're heading for, and then at that point, there's a more sure sense of direction.
Right. Ideally, it's the way I look at it is the first three stages, we really are doing that refugee journey where your home country, metaphorically speaking, your occupational homeland of the past has to be released, and you feel like you're wandering between countries. After you've done the work of the wilderness, which is the self-evaluation and reassessment we just spoke of, the journey does this subtle shift where you see where you're headed. You develop a sort of mission or a vision of what if money were no object, how would you spend your time and energy? And you sort of decide what that next vocational direction is. And the next stage that I call seeing the beacon is precisely about targeting that new self-definition. And it becomes more of a heroic journey. It's like you hold the vision or you hold the intention for that new job or that new career or that new spot, you know, the new occupational homeland. And you really move in that direction the way some of our, you know, heroic journey literature suggests. You just stay the course and you really keep refining that self-definition and try not to jump into something that's too big a compromise out of fear of how long it may take to get that particular job. Because, again, that can be a false start. And you've come this far in terms of self-definition. So the work now becomes really exploring where could I do this kind of work and what industry offers this and how solid is this type of work. You know, we're in a constantly changing marketplace, so I think we have to anticipate that when this period, whether it becomes a recession or it's just a temporary sort of, you know, correction, when this period is over, I still think we are going to be in a permanently unstable marketplace because of the reality of work in this country now. So you want to look at, you know, what does this job look like over time? What are the various places where I could do it? And, you know, really do your homework in that direction and hold your vision and head in that direction.
Do you find it the case, or how often maybe do you find it the case that someone has gone all the way through this, they get to this point and they really think, aha, now I really know where I'm going. My course is set. I'm moving along. And then when they get close up to where it is they think they're going, suddenly they look at it and say to themselves, wait a minute, this isn't the right place.
It's not what I thought.
It's not what I thought. Uh-huh. And maybe in some sense get knocked back. I don't want to use language that's too negative. Well, they sort of get pushed back and they say, okay, now we got to find a different place to go.
Well, it's I'm differentiating the role, you know, what you would do within that job from the location in which you would do it. If you get if it's very, very clear to you what the role would be, your role within this industry, but the company may be the wrong company to do it in, or you may get a job offer from a place that isn't really where you want to be. Those are two different definitions, and that's why I think you have to do your homework. Again, I know I'm pushing the internet, and I have no personal reason to accept that it is an amazing resource in terms of career boards, and there are websites that tell you in depth what the career track is in different companies, let alone different industries. So once you get that sense of self-definition, the next thing to do is to see how realistic it is at this point in time, and what would it pay? And you're right, if you find that out, the earlier you find that out, the better, because then you can regroup. But my belief is that most of what we identify for ourselves, you can find a variation on that theme, if not the exact role or job. You can find it out there. There are still jobs. I don't want to imply that. I don't think we should panic. I think that there are jobs. It's just people, as you described before, who have been on a given job for maybe 10 or 20 years may need to take some time out to bring their skills up to a cutting-edge level in order to find a job that pays them what they want to be paid. On the other hand, you might be able to stay in the same direction, but you'd have to take less salary. So there are a lot of those decisions to make, and there's so much information online for finding that out that it can save a lot of time during the job search.
Sure. And just I guess I was sort of thinking of the case when someone might be approaching, you know, might decide in this direction, might be approaching the goal and suddenly decide that wasn't
right.
What they wanted to do. Maybe it's not, maybe if you've really thought it through, that it's not going to be so likely that suddenly you're going to decide, wait a minute, that wasn't what I wanted to do. It just might be that you thought you could do this with employer A, and then you decided you couldn't. Well, then you find somebody else to do it with. Maybe it's not so much the case that you're going to decide at that point that it was that was completely the wrong direction,
right,
and that you need a completely different direction.
Right. Well, and also, again, the way the book is designed, if you bump into those kinds of walls, just go back towards some of those exercises that are in the wilderness section and revisit them and maybe do some of them again, knowing what you know now about those particular walls you bumped into, and redefine. It goes much faster after you've done it the first time. And by the way, this whole five-stage journey we're describing is, it's much, the most difficult time of doing the stages is the first time, but the point of doing it is that you are creating what I call a survival guide for displacement of any kind, so that once you've lived these stages and you've journaled or, you know, in some way kept a record of your insights and your outcomes, you can revisit this, and it's a shortcut the next time. So, again, the stages are fluid, and you can just swing back and forth. Try this role or this direction, and if it isn't appropriate to the times or something you bump into says, no, this isn't actually me, you just go back and regroup and redefine, but it doesn't take that long.
Yeah. I find myself thinking about earlier conversation of how, to what extent people define themselves by their work, which may not be such a good thing.
Right.
And I guess I wondered whether there are some people that simply have to make the compromise. Maybe they can find something that they can do. It provides adequate income. They have the skills to do it. They can do it. It won't drive them nuts.
Uh-huh.
But maybe, you know, it's not their ultimate fulfillment, and perhaps that's all right. Maybe it's not such a great thing to find your ultimate fulfillment in your job, and what you need to do is you can find a job you can do that will pay the bills and then find your ultimate fulfillment someplace else.
Right. It's possible. I mean, it's very possible. It's just so contrary to our culture. You know, we, for one thing, we're a work-addicted culture. Work is such a big part of identity and what we spend our time and energy with, that it's difficult not to derive a sense of self from the work. The other thing is, we've been primed for the last 20, 30 years about the idea of peak performance and work with passion. So those very attributes, you know, that prime a work ethic and allow us to feel a sense of accomplishment. If you go to the other direction and say, I'm just going to punch the time clock, and when I leave, that's who I really am, that's contrary to everything we've learned. So I think what we're moving toward is building resilience and building a sense of self and self-esteem that crosses, you know, all aspects of our lives, not just the occupational side, rather than going to an all or nothing, you know what I mean? Rather than going to, this is what I do to pay the bills, but I'm just doing time until I get out of here and I can do what I really love. I hope we can find some place in between, because meaningful work is wonderful. It really is. It's just that we need to feel that the locus of control is inside of us, rather than giving that over to the employer and feeling that we're always at effect of our boss's bottom line or our company's bottom line. That's the work we have to do. And also realize that there's sort of no long-term employment anymore. I think we're moving toward that. And when we can accept that and accept that we have skills and tools for managing in an environment where there's no long term, then we'll feel a greater sense of power and personal control without having to give up meaningful work.
Yeah. I guess I find myself wondering, too, for people who've been through this more than once, or maybe even people who've been through it once. I think you've been through it more than once.
Yeah.
Once you go through it and you get yourself the new job, then are you, when you're doing your new job, are you always sitting there thinking, you know, any time this could, this could go away? Does it lead to a more general sort of feeling of unease?
Well, I'm not a good example because I've always been an entrepreneur, and I've had just those two positions that both ended up in layoffs. But in between, over a 30-year period of time, I've always been self-employed, so I feel like a free agent, and I feel like I'll always land on my feet. I'm one of those survivors. But people who have relied throughout their career on an employment situation, yes, they feel that the axe could always fall, that mergers and acquisitions are not stopping. And in a way, if you've done the work of these stages that we've discussed, it's not exactly a paranoid feeling that you sit there saying this could go away. It's one of those things where you stay awake, you stay alert, you keep your resume at the ready, you keep your skills at cutting edge, and you basically say, this is the marketplace of today. It's not personal. But I need to feel that I have some power in this situation, as opposed to just being grateful that you have a new job and going back to sleep at the wheel. We have to stay awake.
Well, we'll have to stop there because we've just come to the end of the time. I want to say thanks very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me here.
Our guest, Ruth Luban. Her book, once again, is titled, Are You a Corporate Refugee? It's published by Penguin and available in paper.